Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, Glacier Farm Media's Ontario field editor, John Gregg, and Johnson Shoyama Graduate School of Public Policy research student, Joanne Ralph Exton, take part in a panel discussion about analytics-based tools.
And that's really the goal of FieldView, is to allow you to bring data from disparate sources into one decision-making platform.
The signaling of Climate Corp being bought by Monsanto was a trigger to other entrepreneurs.
Commodity News Service Canada's Ashley Robinson reports on how the fall calf run has been going in Manitoba.
We did see some white stuff fall in the province over the weekend, which can have producers sending some of their cows off to the market after weaning them.
All on Between the Rows with this week's host, Laura Rance.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rance. Digitalization has become so much a part of our day-to-day lives, we hardly notice how it's reshaping how we operate. I mean, chances are you're listening to this podcast on a mobile device that downloads stuff like this off the internet, sends you weather alerts, helps you do your banking, entertains you while you're waiting in line at the elevator, and, oh yeah, you can make phone calls on it too. Now, all the talk in agriculture these days is about big data. Even if it hasn't come to your farm yet, it's coming to a farm near you, if not already there. Later in the show, we'll be talking to a researcher who has been analyzing the big picture around big data and how the digital economy is relating to agriculture. But first, we're going to bring you a concrete example. Climate Corp, a subsidiary of Monsanto, has recently announced it is launching its FieldView platform in Western Canada. Joining us is John Gregg, Glacier Farm Media's field editor in Ontario. Now, John saw the FieldView platform showcased at Canada's Outdoor Farm Show earlier this fall, and he's here to talk about how these analytics-based digital tools might change how you farm. Hi, John. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura. Glad to be here.
So, what does FieldView offer that farmers don't already have?
So, we've been creating data on crop farms for a long time. The longest example, of course, is yield monitors and combines. But the challenge is, as now there's data coming from seeders and planters and all sorts of other implements, how do you bring that all together into one place to make that decision? And that's really the goal of FieldView, is to allow you to bring data from disparate sources into one decision-making platform. The belief is that the next ag revolution, the data creating more efficiency and precision. The real question is who, and the real battle these days is who is going to be that platform.
So how does it work?
Like other data gathering tools that farmers might already have in their machinery, it's an iPad screen that sits in your tractor or combine or your sprayer. But the real golden little piece of equipment with the FieldView system is the FieldView drive. It's just a little cylinder about the size of a pudding cup. It goes into the data port in your equipment, and it will read data from many different sources, which is really what FieldView's advantage is, and their real goal, and what they put a whole lot of work into, is bringing data from many different types of equipment into one product that you can use and overlay that data, even though they're from competing companies. So, for example, at Canada's Outdoor Farm Show, they had a John Deere sprayer and a Case IH combine, and then a John Deere tractor with a planter. It also works with AGCO equipment, and they continue to expand quite rapidly the other types of equipment that will feed data into the system. And once you have that set up, you can drop pins as you're seeding or you're harvesting, and then for detail, and then that data is stored in the cloud, and then you can access it from your desktop or mobile device and share it with consultants or suppliers. And then the eventual goal is to overlay that data to make concrete decisions. And then the real goal is to make that simple, which is, I think, has been part of the challenge with this type of technology.
So given that it's owned by a company that also supplies technology in the form of seed and crop protection to farmers, does this, you know, is that data analysis related specifically to that company's products?
Well, I'm sure they would like you to choose their company's products, but you can input information from other companies. And I think that's really the step that somebody, and there's other companies that are doing this, have had to take, is that company agnostic approach where it allows you to bring in data no matter what you're using it. And it probably comes from the original architecture of Climate Corporation, which was an originally an ag tech startup before it was bought by Monsanto.
So what kind of farmer or what sort of farmer is Climate Corp hoping to attract with this technology?
So I think they want to farmers who want to make decisions on that data, who want to take the next step with that data. They're either frustrated that they can't make those decisions, or they see the potential in it. Now that said, they have farmers who are who cultivate hundreds of acres, and then they have farmers who cultivate thousands of acres. So I don't think they're necessarily saying they need to be one size. It's more, I think, a state of mind in wanting to be able to make decisions and use that data. Now, I talked to some people from Climate Field View, and they, they say just start collecting the data now. Just start doing it. Yeah. What's the first step? Just start doing this is what they say.
So they're the first that's really hit the market with this kind of technology?
So there are numerous other people in this game. It is, it's a major technology boom sector at the moment. They are, however, the first and largest. DuPont Pioneer, for example, has its Encirca system, which does similar sorts of activities. John Deere has a system as well. And then there are a bunch of other smaller startups. The question will be which companies end up being the leaders eventually. And the Field View system is the most deepest, I guess, and most available across different equipment so far.
How big of impact do you think they could have?
So they say they could help any crop farmer, and I expect they really mean that. They want it to be the platform that every farmer uses, as do their competitors. I think it could be significant, depending on the barriers to adoption and the types of technology that farmers eventually use that drive the data into the system. So, and there's always generational change in the use of technology too, but it certainly they claim that they have the system on 120 million acres across North America, Brazil. That's not insignificant at this point.
So stay on the line, John. I just wanted to expand the conversation a bit. This is one example of how the digital technology could really reshape Canadian agriculture. But joining us now is Joanne Ralph Eckstein, a researcher with the University of Saskatchewan who has been studying just how digital agriculture is being applied throughout the value chain. Hi, Joanne, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having us represent the school and our research on your program.
So, Joanne, this technology isn't just affecting agriculture on the farm. It's an opportunity, and I would suggest a potentially disruptive one for the whole value chain in agriculture. What are you learning about the different ways in which it's being applied?
Well, I would concur with the disruptive, and it's going to be disruptive for the producers. I mean, we're talking of technologies that some are going to be viewed as pretty scary, whereas others are going to be very comfortable accepting it. Whether that's robotics or big data analytics, I think it's much the same. It's going to be disruptive for the retailers. If we do go to an autonomous system, that's going to shake up a lot of the retail sales models that we have. The dealerships are probably going to have to rethink how they provide service. Do we do drone delivery of parts, that type of thing? But I also think there's incredible opportunities, and disruptive can, you can have a very positive message on that. When I look at the statistics, I mean, we do have an aging farmer population. Well, with digital technologies, we're going to give them a chance to farm longer. AutoSteer, GPS, DOT is a good example. The sensors, the cameras, you can see places that you couldn't see. You can, and if, you know your land, but now if you can make your labor easier. I also see it as very attractive to those younger producers. And currently for the 2016 census, we're sitting at about 10% of them. So it's going to be very attractive for that. And it's also, Laura, the one thing that I really learned in this, we've got an incredible depth of human and social capital in our people in ag. That's across the supply chain. We're talking hardware, software development, talent pools. And that is, it's just a marvelous story.
So where would the Climate Corp initiative fit into some of the paradigm that you've been looking at in terms of the application of this technology?
Well, I think John said it wonderfully. Climate Corp would, for example, has brought a whole, they're the ones, and I will use someone else's words. The signaling of Climate Corp being bought by Monsanto was a trigger to other entrepreneurs. And for that, they all will always deserve credit. They put the spotlight on the importance of climate to agriculture. And a lot of people, unless you farm, you don't get that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is their number one thing. The number two thing is when I saw the new platform that FieldView has, it is very intuitive. I mean, there's no question in my mind that if you train a 12-year-old who's interested in ag, they're going to get it. It's very intuitive. So you're bringing together the ability to harness data and make it usable. And I embrace that because that's what we need. We need to make these decisions usable for producers.
Now, you've looked at other case studies of just specific examples of where this is working or being used in agriculture. Can you give me some examples?
It's a very long list. So in terms of digital technology itself, we're seeing hardware, software development locally. We're seeing talent pools. There's interest in ag in students and high school kids that we never would have thought were interested in ag before because now it's neat. We're able to do machine-to-machine learning, and we're making it here, that interoperability. We're going beyond color classes. You know, we can bring together the greens and the blues and the reds,
right,
and we can still talk to each other. Seeing incredible value in online marketing platforms. This is getting producers a chance to sell and shifting those asymmetries of information.
So in a way, just to cut in there, in a way, it's sort of balancing the big versus small. I mean, using some of this technology, a small farmer can be just as adept at marketing as someone who's got the volume and economies of scale.
Yeah, and that's what actually some of the other longer-term thinkers are suggesting. We don't have to necessarily stay on the trajectory of larger farms, fewer farms. This is giving those smaller to mid-size operations, you know, the 3,000, 2,000, maybe 5,000-acre farms, abilities that they never would have had before to connect directly with the consumers. And that's not just crops, right? It's livestock. We've got livestock online marketing now. It's huge.
You know, we talk about this technology, and I think most farmers look at it from the perspective of whether it's easier to manage their costs or, you know, maybe improve their productivity. But what about this data as a commodity? Is this going to give farmers something more to sell?
It's very speculative at this point. We have no evidence to suggest that the commoditization of data is here in Canada. The only evidence that we found is the farm mobile model in the USA, where a producer collects the data on his own machine, and then farm mobile and the producer split the revenue on the sale of it to somebody who wants to buy it.
But John, you mentioned,
so we don't,
you know, we did talk about the possibility, or there's certainly a question over who owns the data. And I guess ownership is different than selling it.
Yeah, and that's where we have a bit of a policy void here in the prairies and Canada in particular. We've heard from our 25 firms that we've interviewed that, you know, there are some problems in our system because this is a new target. So we don't have the American Farm Bureau to pull the actors together and decide if we need to develop a code of ethics.
John, right? I was just going to bring John into the conversation. What's your thoughts on this?
No, those are very good points, especially the last one on the Farm Bureau. The Farm Bureau certainly has done some very good work in the United States, is really globally in this question of data and who owns it. And you're right, we don't have anybody here to do it. I think what...
Just to clarify...
The commoditization of it, I'm not sure there's going to be a large value to selling it. I think the value will be in the interpretation of it for your business. And then as far as who owns it, I think it's just, is the value of the service greater than the risk you have to take as far as ownership? So it's that give and take. And we have a lot of examples outside of agriculture as well where people have just decided, well, that service is of greater value to me than giving up a bit of privacy. And I think that's just shaking through the system in the agriculture world at this point.
Just to clarify for people that may not be familiar, what did the American Farm Bureau do?
So it got together interested parties on data security in agriculture, and it actually created a spin-off organization company that can bring together some of this third-party data in a more secure fashion. I'm not sure that is going to be sustainable through, into the future, but they certainly put quite a bit of work into it. And they also created some ethical guidelines and some guidance to farmers in how to use it.
So
yeah, and I would agree. And like I said, I think it's the key words to me are the code of data ethics and the standards. I mean, to me, it seems very important that the producers know and they're fully aware of where their data is going and where it's stored.
So, Joanne, some of your research focuses, it's part of a much bigger project looking at how this kind of technology can further Canada's role in the global economy. What are you seeing there, or what are you finding there in terms of the potential that this offers?
Well, there's a few ways you can approach that answer. One of the highest levels is, are we an attractive investment climate? I mean, if you look at the world governance indicators, Canada has some of the lowest levels of corruption and the strongest regulatory environment. That's a huge asset over our competitors in other countries who have equivalent land resources. So can we export our product? Absolutely. And that we're dry land farmers and probably the best dry land farmers in the world. And in a changing climate, that's an asset. How do we get there? Well, it was very interesting at the Precision Ag Conference. Global Affairs Canada was at the podium. I've never seen that before. You know, helping entrepreneurs set up around the world.
So there's certainly a real interest in this in terms of furthering Canada's position as an exporter of agricultural commodities.
Not just that, but also think about our small equipment manufacturers. I mean, we're sitting on probably the world's best seeding production technology that there is. And you combine that with all of the sensor capability and the data collection and the capture. I know I'm a bit of an idealist, but we can lead the world in this. It's just our choice.
So what's holding us back?
We're into a very new space. This is like you back to your original. This is disruptive. You're going to have cooperation with the regulators, which if you want to take for the example of DOT, the autonomous platform for seeding, because it's transportation, Saskatchewan Government Insurance, SGI, is in dialogue with them, and it's very positive. On the drone side, Canada Transport Canada, but those regs are changing. So we also have identified issues that the Canadian patent system crushes ag tech innovation, and we have a bit of an issue with investment capital. IRAP is an excellent program, we've heard, but it's very difficult for those knowledge-based systems, so the KBS, to access funds. We've been told loud and clear that this is a risk-averse investment climate. And people that have these big ideas have to go south for ag venture capital.
So, John, just back to you. What do you see as the barriers, even at the on farm level?
So, I think it is with any farm technology, it has to pay. And farmers have shown once something tips that scale to where they see an economic value, they will adopt it very quickly. So, for example, auto guidance is on. a very good percentage of row crop equipment now in Canada, and that, you know, that came to be because it helped operator fatigue and also allowed for, you know, more precise field operations. So the gathering of the bigger data and into a platform such as Climate FieldView isn't at that level yet, but I think it can come down to not necessarily the platform, but it can come down to, do I have enough data to bring into the platform from whatever I'm doing to make it worth my while to invest my time in and money in the platform? So a farmer that might be a part-time farmer and doesn't have precision seeding equipment may go, well, I have a yield monitor data, but I don't have other data. Maybe I don't have spray data. Where is that tipping point on how much data I have to make it make sense to use a large amount? Now, there are so many other ways of getting the data. You have satellite imagery these days. And I think there are, you know, when a smaller farmer goes to buy a new planter or seeder, they're going to have to look at, this new planter or seeders with this precision technology are very expensive. Does it make sense for me to hire a custom operator who has that equipment so that I can harvest the data? Does that make sense? So those are some simple on the farm examples. And then there's just a generational change. I was interested in what Joanne said about that this could make it easier for older farmers to farm and to manage some of the things they've managed. That's a very interesting point. But there still is some barriers as far as generational. Farmers, I hear numerous stories from, you know, agronomists, for example, of farmers who have the data but aren't currently using it. So the question is, what's going to tip that? And, you know, a system, sometimes a system that can help you make decisions on that data is probably as valuable as the data itself. So that's where you know, a system like this could quickly tip into greater use of the data.
Okay. Well, those are pretty long lists, but I think we're going to be following this story more in the future. And I just wanted to say thank you to both of you for joining me today. That was John Gregg, Glacier Farm Media's Eastern Canadian Field Editor, and Jerron Rolf Eckstein, a master's student with the Johnson Shoyama Graduate School of Public Policy in Saskatoon. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rance. Next up, we're talking to Ashley Robinson, a reporter for Commodity News Service Canada, about how the fall calf run has been going in Manitoba. Hi, Ashley.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. So how is the fall run been going?
Well, it's been a pretty strong fall run so far. The last 2 weeks have been the busiest of the year with a month end and, of course, bills coming due. In Manitoba, the past 2 weeks have topped out at over 17,000 head running through the auction marts both week. As well, the prices have held steady, but they are up due to highs on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the low Canadian dollar.
So what's been going on at the CME?
Well, the end of October saw the CME reaching its highest level in 5 months, with packers bidding U.S. dollars, $116 per 100 weight for slaughter-ready cattle in the U.S. plains versus United States dollar, $119 per 100 weight for asking prices. But last week, we started to see those prices fall a bit, with packers bidding slightly less at U.S. $120 per 100 weight for market-ready cattle in the U.S.
So with those high U.S. markets, are we seeing more or less interest from the American buyers here?
Well, we're not really seeing a lot of interest from American buyers, but even with that low dollar, once the buyers factor in the exchange rate and trucking, it's just make it end up breaking even for them. So there isn't really that enticing of a market for Americans here. However, there is starting to be increased interest from buyers out east, like Ontario, who are now starting to inquire about buying calves here this year.
So what are the auction mart prices looking like for farmers?
Well, here in Manitoba at the auction marts last week, we saw feeder steers in the 800 to 900 pound range selling anywhere from 165 to 214 per 100 weight. Heifers in the same weight were selling for slightly less, falling between $160 to $191 per 100 weight, but that was pretty steady from the previous week. But I had just talked with Robin Hill at Heartland Livestock Services in Burton a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And he said prices at his auction mart are up from this time last last year. So producers there, he said, are getting anywhere from 45 to 50 cents a pound more compared to the same time last year.
So how are the volumes? I mean, are we starting to get to the end of that fall run?
Well, yes and no. Volumes are expected to start dropping off because we just did have the annual two busiest weeks of the year. But we did see some white stuff fall in the province over the weekend, which can have producers sending some of their cows off to the market after weaning them. Either that or they'll be stuck hanging on them to them for another 6 weeks, which of course means feeding them until then, which makes for increased costs. So it could still be a pretty busy week at the auction marts this week.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Ashley.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
That was Ashley Robinson, who's a reporter with Commodity News Service Canada. Well, that's all we have for you this week on Between the Rows, but we'll be back with more next week. Thanks for joining us. I'm Laura Rance.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.